In this episode, Ryan and I discuss the centrality of the banking function, the locus of control, and we return to the legal contractual question of who benefits from the provision and the repayment of credit. And we had fun doing so. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery.
I'm your co-host, Ryan Griggs.
It's been a minute since you've been here, Mr. Griggs. I've missed you.
Likewise.
Thanks for returning.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And so look, this is December in 2024. Everybody has been busting your chops and ours as well, asking when is this lovely book going to be available for purchase so they can enjoy it. And I'm not trying to throw you on blast. I mean, I know that there are challenges. I've lived vicariously through you this whole process. and so I'm really not trying to throw you on blast, but I would like an update if you don't mind, please.
No, it's a lot of people are asking, which I appreciate. Thank you for everyone's interest. And yeah, I know this office has gotten a lot of questions and I've gotten a lot of questions, new clients, just members of the public. Had a gentleman just somehow found my phone number, randomly called me the other day.
Ooh. and you answered.
Yeah, I did. I was expecting a call from a bank. So yes, I answered. It's coming. I mean, I've learned a lot. I've made every mistake you could possibly make as a self-publishing author. I like what you say. I think I wrote it in a Facebook post the other day. You know, if you don't have time to do it wrong, you definitely don't have time to do it over, which is a comment you've made before that I really like.
Thanks for cleaning that up.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you.
And I buy a lot of books. You know, I buy books on Amazon and, you know, new ones, used ones. And I have a lot of complaints about how that normally happens. You know, the books come all, they're in like, the lowest of the low level of packaging, and the corners are bent, manual, and everything's bad. And then I've gotten the print-on-demand type ones. You know, then you don't have to hold inventory and manage the inventory and all of this. But I've gotten those books before, and pages are falling out because
print bleeds.
Yeah, it's just poor. And you have very limited dimension. I mean, this type dimension, this U.S. Digest style 8.5 by 5.5 dimension is typically not available on a print-on-demand service. So they do a 9 by 6, which I think is too large. Anyway, there were things that I just wanted to do differently, all the way from the production through to the shipping, which means that we get to set up everything, right, from nothing. And I've got a whole education on like the publishing industry and editors, and you know, I have this saying, I've shared it more and more with people close to me. It's like, the adults aren't home and none are coming. Right? The people who know aren't here, and they're not going to be around anytime soon. So it's just been a process of learning by doing and screwing up and then paying to have things redone and going through all the mental struggle around all of that. Anyway, it's been a fruitful learning experience.
We've had a lot of therapy sessions over the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, on the first order, you know, ordered a couple thousand, you know, to be ready to fulfill over who knows how long that's going to last me. I don't know. See, another thing, you just don't, how long do you keep an inventory for? I don't know. If you do print on demand, you don't have to think about that. Anyway, ordered a bunch. And the shipment carrier failed to deliver 3 separate times. The printing company couldn't get a hold of the carrier. We couldn't get a hold of the carrier. Finally, books arrived on 15 minutes notice. Somehow managed to take delivery where we're stocking them in California. Some of them were damaged, had to reorder. You know, we're receiving orders ourselves. We're packaging and fulfilling and shipping all of those orders ourselves. And so that means selecting the package type and the, you know, interior packing material, everything. I mean, everything. You don't think about, we use a great company called Uline. They have all these different packing, but it's thousands of different possible packing materials to go through, and then the pricing out and the testing. And, you know, I want someone's going to get a book. I want it to be like nice, you know, like, oh, they took time to package it correctly. And yeah. And, you know, we're setting this up. It's not just for now, right? We think like, I want, you know, now I'm thinking about, you know, how's this going to work in 10 years type of thing? Like, what are the systems and processes that to the best of our ability will sustain in that time period? Obviously, we're going to make continual improvements, but it's like, try to get it as right as well as we can now to be durable and reliable out into the future. Anyway, so we've gone through, not to mention the back end payment, payment processing, communication between the where orders are placed and the software used to manage the inventory. Certain systems talk to each other, others don't. Had to learn about and sort through all of that. There's just been a lot. On top of all this, my current website doesn't have the e-commerce functionality to be able to do any of this. And so there's also a complete website redesign going on at the same time. And there's a lot of functionality that we're going to add there that I think people have wanted for a long time.
It's the struggles of capitalism.
This is cool. I'll tell you this. I haven't told you this today. We talked as we do normally beforehand. I didn't mention this yet. So I'm total redesign on the website. We're adding a login functionality. So, you know, just anybody off the street can create a profile, get access to certain material that doesn't need to be out there in the big wide world. But then, of course, clients in process, people who are coming around for the first time, they'll have special material. And then, of course, current clients will have material just for them. So, you know, my past talks at Banking with Life events and a whole bunch of other stuff just for all these kinds of videos and tutorials on how to manage an individual policy with a particular company and advanced IBC type stuff. So we're building the platform for them to have that. And there will also be certain digital products for sale. So like there's going to be an audiobook. There's going to be a ebook version. The audiobook, I'm going to narrate. You've agreed, thank you, to narrate your foreword. That's going to be available as a private podcast.
What?
So yeah, you buy, you get an email. That email has a unique URL. You can then upload that URL to your podcast platform of your choice. And you get the audiobook. I mean, it'll be on a podcast platform, but it's basically an audiobook. So you don't have to go and subscribe to Amazon or whatever, deal with any of these other conventional audiobook type platforms. It's hopefully be much easier and you can use whatever platform you want. That'll be nicely audio engineered and mastered. So that'll be very nice. But another digital product offering that will be on the site, you know, as part of this whole web design or web redesign relaunch thing, I was going back through all of my digital media material to see what I've got, to any of it could be of any use. And I came across my recording on an iPhone of the first seminar I went to with Nelson in Northern California, early 2016.
Of Nelson's seminar.
Nelson's full 10-hour, two-day seminar. Yeah. And so I reached out to Kaylin Peterson, who's a practitioner in Northern California, who was hosting Nelson at the time, and said, hey, look what I found. And, you know, it's her event. She put it on. And so I wanted her permission, you know, can I make this available? Mm-hmm. And just yesterday I heard back from her and she was enthusiastic. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have that audio mastered as well. It's audible. Like you can hear it, but it could be improved. It was just on the little native iPhone recorder.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll make it better to the degree that we can. And then that will be available on the site as well. A paid thing.
Got paid for.
A reasonable.
So what do I not know? You haven't told me yet.
That I got the full.
No, I knew that. I didn't know you'd heard back from Kaylin.
Right.
But my question is, so that was the first time you heard Nelson. That's Nelson giving his 10-hour presentation, right? 10 hours, not 6.5.
Right, it's the full one.
It's the full 10 hours, yeah. And you know what? We have two of those as well. They're available to our clients only. Anyway, but I ask you if you recorded the first time you gave a presentation out in California.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you find that?
I have that, yeah. I got to watch it back.
Well, okay, sure, so look, he's got it then. Perfect. So you have it.
It exists.
So it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's good. I genuinely just haven't listened to it for a long time. I remember thinking at the time that it was really good.
But yeah. So it may be available too in the future is all I'm
saying. Yeah. Well, and more of that will come. I mean, this the idea is to build out a platform where much more of this. Because I'm over the public platforms, you know. I mean, this is good. We did, you know, YouTube and the podcast and it all fine, great. You know, you got these people who complain about the censorship and they're posting on platforms where, you know, you clicked, I agree, to this giant terms of service where you forfeited all rights to everything, right? And then you whine about it after the fact when people that don't like you and don't like your politics and your ideas exercise the rights that you deferred to them. It's like, okay, it's not good. Like, I wish they didn't do that too. I get it, but why? I mean, there's a little bit of a naivete there where it's like, what? Is this a surprise? Like, ooh, the powers that be don't like ideas about freedom and independence? Like,
Yeah. Well, there's some naivete there. And, you know, people just want to get their work out, you know? And
yeah. Well, you got to take extra steps to build something out that is just independent.
Yeah. And that's not easy. We can talk about it for 15 or 20 minutes or forever. And it's all great conversation. Finding the actual talent and the structure and taking the time, effort, and energy to actually, you know, what does it look like? What, how does it function?
Yeah.
What's going to be available? You know, what, in what order or sequence or, you know, level of, you know, I want to say control or access. I mean, you don't want just
functionality. Yeah.
U-Haul up Yahoo off the street and having access to, you know, your best work. You don't throw pearl before swine. That all takes a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, to your question, you know, it'll probably be January of 25.
I'm going to act like, you know, I'm going to talk to you like I talk to the life insurance companies whenever these mutual life insurance companies, whenever they say, oh, we're going to have a new product or we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And, you know, in the first quarter, you said January, and I'm just going to confirm what year is my question.
Look, I got a dissertation to write, so it really has to be soon. Or it's, I mean, it would have to just wait. So, and it's not going
to
wait.
It's going to happen. I'm not trying to add pressure on you. I'm just trying to have a little light in the levity of all of the work, you know. So, January, perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I received my two cases. So, I requested two cases, right?
Well, people who came to the Banking with Life event already got theirs.
Exactly. So, you know, there was
an opportunity.
There was. It was a small window. And if you weren't there, you missed it. But they received theirs. And I have a case that I'm going to seal it up like in perpetuity, you know. It's like won't be available. I mean, I have done that with others' books for different reasons, but I have a case. I'm just saying I'm not bootlegging anything on the black market. And I'm not going to do anything that Mr. Griggs wouldn't agree to, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, rub salt in any wounds, but I have my own very own case. So thank you.
Anyway. Absolutely. And I do think that I'll do, I mean, I've had a couple people ask about like wholesale type things, and
I told you when you unloaded them this morning, I'm like, you give me a price, I'll write you a check. I didn't ask for any breaks, discounts, or anything. I said, just give me a price. So,
and you know what's in it. I mean, my encouragement to other agents who might be interested in that is to get one for yourself first and read it, because after you read it, you may not want to wholesale it,
may not want to buy it in bulk,
yeah. But if that's the case, then, you know, I could get around to being open to that.
What? You can get around to being open to...
About a wholesale type arrangement.
By volume. Right. Mm-hmm. I got it.
Higher quantity.
Sure.
License to resale, that type of thing.
Yeah. I just wholesale everything.
I mean, you know, it...
So...
There's just not another piece of literature, like an actual book, that explains what the philosophy behind policy design is. You know, it's just, for whatever reason, and we could speculate why, I probably have in the past, that attitude of like why you might do this or that has just never been, I just don't see that anywhere. So anyway, that might motivate even people who are also in the business to want to look at it. But with that comes, you know, my particular view of it, and it, which I'm clear about. You know, I don't, it's a framework, not the framework for becoming your own banker. But that view may not align well with what another agent or advisor thinks is IBC or what it means to navigate an advisory process competently. And in fact, I expect that my view would not be the majority view among agents of how to navigate the process. It's just been, you know, we've talked about it before. Nelson says, you know, the infinite banking concept is not a sales tool for life insurance agents. And we just have, that's just been totally missed. It's really become, not in all cases, but in many online cases, it's become a as the carriers like to talk about, a sales system.
That's how they classify it.
Yeah.
Infinite banking concept. And then they mention other, legitimately, they're nothing but sales systems in the same sentence, in the same paragraph.
Right.
If you use these sales systems, like this one and this one, then they're all combined together. And I don't think the infinite banking concept is becoming your own banker is or should be. I don't think that's what it is, and it should be classified with them. But then, and I'm not carrying the water for the life insurance companies, but they're like they don't want to endorse anything that has the word bank or banking in it.
And I get that too.
Yeah, I do too.
Which is fine. I mean, I don't want
5,000 agents across the country, you know, that doing whatever they're doing. Yeah. Like the life insurance company can't control them. And just because they may write and deliver some types of policies, you know, you would assume then the life insurance company is endorsing what they're doing. You know, the life insurance company is just delivering death benefit life insurance for a premium.
Right. Paying a dividend, issuing policy loans, which I really am fine with. I mean, I've heard other agents who like want more involvement from the carriers, and it's like, guys, there's we're doing different things for a reason. Yeah. Like, let them just handle their product development, their online systems, their policy service. OMG, there's a whole opportunity there. You know, I got this is like surprising to people, but you know, the dividend paying whole life built for the IBC and then managed and used by the policy owner for what Nelson would call banking purposes, that's a different kind of experience from the perspective of policy services at these life insurance companies than is the ownership and use of just an ordinary life insurance policy, right? The companies will rarely hear from a policy owner of a policy in a conventional setting, right? It's there for death benefit purposes. You know, maybe, you know, like these big carriers, big four have like, you know, they'll talk about being able to access cash value by a policy loan as a sort of emergency type thing, right? There's some money here as like a last ditch type deal. And so maybe there's an occasional loan request, you know, but that is night and day compared to what goes on with IBC style whole life, where we're regularly taking and repaying loans. I mean, I've had, and it happened, like I have my own clients who, no matter how many times I tell them, and it's not all of them, but like, please, we will facilitate your support and service requests. Like, please come to us. Like, I can't tell you to not contact the carrier.
Yeah,
you're a policy owner. There's a phone number. You call them if you want to. You know, you can go deal with frontline customer service staff all you want. And I think genuinely a lot of people try to do that first without coming to me because they don't want to, like, they think they're going to overwork me or something. Understand that you as a client come first above everything.
Yeah.
So like servicing and supporting you is the primary objective here. Like, we want to do that and do that well. And we only work with management, right? I'm not going to deal with, because I've genuinely had multiple times, and it doesn't matter the carrier, doesn't matter the life insurance company, where the frontline service people will give wrong information to the client. And, you know, the carriers know about it. It's, and you might say, well, that sounds like sketchy, or, you know, why wouldn't they know better? And yeah, why wouldn't people know better? I mean, pick your subject and ask that question. But it's genuinely because this is a totally different type of exercise of the contractual rights that come with the policy as compared to the vast majority of this business, where it's, we're just buying death benefit or renting death benefit.
Yep.
That's why it happens, and it's going to continue to happen. And that's where the company's focus should be, is on improving the understanding of their own product throughout their staff, and then the systems they develop to service customers, not in trying to educate people about the banking function or economics or
personal financial strategy. Oh my God, there's a lot there. But yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you. I mean,
but that being said, that's where they're focused. Like, just do that. Like, be a well-run company.
Yeah, don't look, the turnover at a life insurance company, the amount of training that it takes to train up a frontline customer service rep is long and tedious, because it's like they're a life insurance company. They have all these different products for different reasons. You know, you have higher early cash value or higher death benefit. Maybe it goes into a qualified plan. Maybe it's a limited pay, 10 pay, 20 pay, whatever. They have these different single pay. They have all these products, right? And so the customer service rep has to, you know, have a baseline knowledge of each of those products, right? And then it expands. I do not want the life insurance company. Hell, if they'll just read Nelson's book, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Okay. If they'll just read this book when it becomes available, I'll be happy. Don't try to educate my clients with the infinite banking concept. And I mean, I can even go on agents. You know, agents have, like you said, you deal with, you speak with management, not the first level of customer service rep, which they can do a lot of things. I mean, I don't want to disparage a customer service rep at a life insurance company. They take calls all day long, every day, in all kinds of different situations. Now, I agree that if you don't know the answer, you know, it's okay to be ignorant, not okay to remain ignorant.
Right.
And don't guess. You know, my office, we have a couple of things that we don't do. They're third rails. Number one is assume. You know, we can't assume. I can't assume that you understand what I'm saying, you know, or what we're talking about, you know. So no assuming. And so they shouldn't assume either.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But what I see is, and I'm in complete agreement. I mean, the day before, so we were closing for Thanksgiving. You know, I don't remember what day it was. It was early in the week. And actually, I think it was on a Friday. I'd have to look at my calendar. But a client called, right? A client of 2 or 3 years should know what's going on, okay? And I'm glad they called. Right, for service. And of course, we leave early on Fridays. Our office closes at 2 o'clock central on Fridays. So he's calling at 1:55 with a problem. And we're fixing to go on break for Thanksgiving, traveling. Everybody's traveling all over the country, whatever they're doing, right? And so they stay and you know, deal with this client who had made a mistake. You know, they gone online and paid a premium, and then they paid another premium, or then they allowed the company to draft another premium. So in essence, there were two premiums drafted. Mm. They did that. Right? The client did that. And so, you know, our office is staying open to help undo all that. Mm-hmm. If they would have contacted our office first, it wouldn't have happened.
Wouldn't have been a problem.
And yeah. So what I see, and I'm saying that, and we love the clients, you know, I'm just using that as an example, right? And what I typically see is, you know, relatively new clients, maybe a first year or two, maybe the third year. You know, it's a learning process. Yes. And they rely heavily on us. I mean, there's two ladies in the front of my office that handle service and support for our clients, and they're happy to do so. Mm-hmm. They want things to go smooth. They want your needs to be met, right? And you think, oh, well, what kind of service or, you know, support do you need? Oh, I don't know. I've used the example many times. I don't know if we're practicing the infinite banking concept, and I'm not saying everybody has every dollar available in loan value collateralized, which I don't agree with that. But if you're active, mm-hmm. controlling the banking function in your life, and, you know, I just remember there was a gentleman, he's a client, a beautiful guy, you know, great guy, salt of the earth. He's traveling from one country to another, closing on property in another U.S. territory and banking in another state that he does not reside in.
Hmm.
Right. And his team on the ground is closing this deal in a U.S. territory. And with the regulations in the financial industry today across banks, insurance companies, investment companies, brokerage houses, you know, this idea of money laundering and, you know your customer and identity theft, that gentleman couldn't have got that loan processed because of all of the different territories and countries and states that the process was happening in without somebody on our side supporting that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not saying every issue is that technical or that.
There's so many different examples.
Oh my gosh.
Of things that, yeah. I think part of this, when I try to, it's like, why is this not, like, what's really going on here? I think part of it is there is either a very bad or more often just none at all of an understanding of what a long-lasting professional financial advisory relationship looks like or should look like outside of the conventional sales world where it's all just about managing your money. Mm-hmm. Like the notion that you, Mr. or Mrs. Client, are a free and independent individual building up contractual control over capital that you own, that you on your side, that I'm not managing for you.
You're responsible
right?
for.
And that you're going to, and you have contractual rights to that policy that you're going to exercise in unique ways that wouldn't come up in a managed money type situation.
Yep.
Right? You know, transfers of ownership and changes of beneficiary and policy loan origination and repayments and emergency last minute, you know, policy loan type activity. Fixing errors, right? Just if a bank account on file with the company for electronic deposit is failing for some reason, like just resolving that type of issue. There's this whole category of other things that just wouldn't come up in a conventional financial sales, money management, wealth, quote unquote, wealth management type situation. So I think there's like a unique category of need and service and attention that people just aren't familiar with, both on the consumer side and on the agent, advisor, wealth manager, whatever kind of side. And then so much of the industry of agents are just operating. It's like having, you know, like working off of Windows 08 or something. It's like just working off of an old operating system where they're coming from real estate or they're coming from conventional financial sales or something. So they bring, whether they know it or not, that mindset of those other industries with them. And then you sprinkle on some financial entertainment, social media, online video on top of all that. And you get the high volume, high turnover, low or no contact type of, you know, fast food, drive through, drive by type financial sales in the whole life insurance and quote unquote banking related world.
Exactly. I mean, you are spot on. If you look at the traditional financial advisory footprint, and you're the broker, whether you're, a registered representative or an investment advisor, whatever, maybe you're a tax preparer, but you sell qualified plans too, which, you know, is legitimate. Yeah, I think that that's a blurring of the lines. That's like going to get legal advice or for estate planning, but the son-in-law writes life insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a little bit of a blending there that, and people could do what they want, no question. But in the world, in the financial world generally, from the advisor, the broker side, the game is assets under management, AUM, because you get paid a fee, right? A very small percentage and a fee maybe, or there's fee only, which that's a whole quagmire you can get in there. Oh, I'm fee only. Yeah, but you get paid backdoor commissions and fees. So, and there's lots of information out there, that conflict and the potential conflict of, but whatever. My point here is that the focus is generally on assets under management, AUM. And then that's the goal, to gather as much AUM as possible and then to keep people from leaving. And so there's that whole paradigm from the mindset of the agent and advisor that the more I can control you and your money, the more profitable I'll be in the long run. And that's flawed thinking completely. And then the subtle, intentional or unintentional promotion of dependency. You come to me for everything. You know, and I hear, you know, I spend a certain amount of time every year, you know, hanging out with or being around, you know, financial professionals, and they're not all bad. They're not all good either. You know, and they brag on how much control they have on their clients. You know, they call me for everything or they don't do anything. And it's like, oh my gosh, what? That is foreign to me. Would make me very uncomfortable. But that idea of dependency, you know, is, mm-hmm. is heavily promoted, right? Whether it's spoken about or unspoken. And then it's easy for the consumer then too to acquiesce.
To abdicate.
And abdicate their responsibility, mm-hmm. right? It's like, yeah, well, they're handling it. They're doing it. And, you know, we're busy. I'm working. My head's down. Life is full. The schedule's full. Life is busy. And it's like, yeah, no. And so the whole financial industry is kind of built that way, you know, not just down to the agent.
Yeah.
And so when you want to talk about free and independent thinking and actions, yeah, I don't think there's anything in the financial world that fits any better than the infinite banking concept, where I can be free and independent and control the banking function, and I can control the capital accumulation, the accumulation of I can control all of these things, and I'm moving, you know, so that's a change in a thought process. And so I'm moving from the conventional paradigm of thinking, weeding through that noise, going through the noise of the infinite banking concept, and just moving into that paradigm. There's a learning curve. And it's a process. And my point here is that exists. Everything that we're talking about, that paradigm does exist. But the ability to be free and independent does exist as well. And it is okay to... it is not okay to be dependent upon an agent or advisor, but it is absolutely okay to be supported and take advantage of service while you're navigating through this change. And if you do that, go through that process of moving away from abdication, picking up the responsibility of being free and independent. And that does not mean you have to be a life insurance expert. Does not mean that at all. But whenever you, I feel like our clients have a better understanding of their policies than most life insurance agents. And that to me is success. I'm not saying all of them, and I'm but that is the direction that we're going. That is the goal for our clients, to be completely comfortable and understand what they have and how they can do with what they have, what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And that's, and that brings me peace.
Yeah. So. It's kind of nice that, you know, the conventional advisor is more profitable to the degree he controls more of your money. Whereas in the IBC world, I'm more profitable the more you, the individual, control more of your capital.
But isn't that more? I mean, how many people do you want to be depending upon you? Right. You know, and at what level? I understand that.
I just think that's a nice incentive alignment. Like, that should be, that's the way it should be.
It's the way it should be, yes. And yes, and the market will reward.
Yeah. I keep going back to, and you know, this all really fits into this comment that we were going to bring up, but I keep going back to this idea that we're all brought up and conditioned and indoctrinated to be severely undercapitalized. You know, I've said the financial analysis nowadays is just being able to tell the difference in magnitude between two numbers. You know, that's a higher number, that's a lower number. Oh, I figured it out. Like, it's been so dumbed down, so diluted. And like we've been talking about, just give over control to the expert, right? Your assets under their management. Let them do it. The abdication of responsibility. This is all part and parcel of the same overarching paradigm of manufacturing the appearance of complexity, mm-hmm. and often the reality of it too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you can do both, I mean, it's really, right? Because if things are more complex and more difficult, and you know, you're more dumb, then you know, your need to rely on somebody else is all the greater. I mean, this all just goes in. It all fits in.
It fits so nicely. Perfect. Yeah. Yes.
It's like, wow, how convenient. So we're brought up in that, right? And then there's all sorts of other things. You know, the first part of Nelson's book is the human problems. Like, we have our own internal psychological issues to get over. You know, keeping expenses down relative to income, right? Overcoming this idea to constantly spend more and more. All of that fits together, and it bleeds into, I know I've talked about financial fight or flight, right? Mm-hmm. When we're severely undercapitalized, when our access to resources is very low, we're backed into a corner, and it causes the anxiety and the stress that is so familiar in the financial problems type of market. And so we got to do something, right? We got to act. We got to, reach for the big, high advertised nominal Bitcoin rate of return. Yeah. The new shiny thing, yeah. Right? It compresses.
Passive income.
It compresses our, like, the nuance in our awareness. It just becomes about where is sufficiently better, sufficiently safer, never mind the nuance, never mind the analysis, never mind taking it slow and thinking about it. It's just, where's the shiny, flashy thing? Let me go there quick. And a category of that type of behavior is this rate chasing thing, yep. Where people think about IBC as, it only really makes sense, and therefore often doesn't make sense according to this perspective, if you're able to go out and take a policy loan and invest in something where the rate of return on the investment exceeds the rate on the policy loan. Like, that becomes the only frame through which somebody could evaluate whether or not to do IBC, whether or not to buy dividend paying whole life, build a certain kind of way, pay a bunch of premium, build a bunch of cash value, take policy loans to go pay for things. Like, the only way that a certain segment of the financial consumer marketplace can understand that is if the policy loans are going to go be used for an investment where the return on the investment exceeds the return on or exceeds the rate on the policy loan.
Yeah.
And it's so like without even knowing it, we have I think of like chutes and ladders. I mean, we've or that you know those carnival games where you drop balls into the top of the grid and then they all filter down into different silos. It's like without even knowing it, we've come over here to this little silo of presupposition of like inherited paradigm. Like, oh, that's that. Oh, that must be how like, yeah, obviously, again, bigger number, better, right? Like, yeah, if the investment is greater than the if the advertised return on the investment is greater than the rate of the policy loan. Yeah, okay, I should do that. What is lost is the whole freaking is the banking function.
Well, that's not even discussed.
Right. It's not.
No, no. That's completely left out. Let me, because I just wrote down what the first things that were lost. I'm glad you said that. The first things that are lost, number one, is control. You've lost control. Typically, I know I'm speaking broadly. You lose liquidity and you absolutely lose safety whenever you're going for the complexity and the flashy thing. And then, so I'm in complete agreement. The banking function is never discussed, and it's not discussed at any in any depth whatsoever. This is, I'm going to become the bank, you know, bank on yourself, bank this, bank that, banking with life, becoming your own banker. So I'm not, my point is, you know, let's finance, you know, get a bunch of money in a policy, collateralize it as soon as possible, and go buy some passive income and real estate. You know, okay, that makes for a great presentation.
Right.
And it makes for a very beautiful and wonderful potential, right? And the complexity and all that looks wonderful. The idea, let me, if anyone, in America today can practice the infinite banking concept as influenced by Nelson Nash. And you do not have to have these big complex presentations. You do not have to have a HELOC. You do not have to have a big front end premium. You know, I mean $250 a month or $500 a month, and I don't care what you do, whatever it is you do, God bless you, do it to the best of your ability. All right. But I'm saying, very simply, number one, America is generally undercapitalized, period. You cannot practice the banking function or control the banking function without capital. So if you focused on building capital systematically, on purpose, with intent. It does not have to be a large amount, right? Start where you can. I'm just saying $500 a month in premium, $6,000 a year, everybody in America could do that if they wanted to. And then financing one automobile, just one in your lifetime is a starting place. And learn how to control the banking function within your own life. Within your own framework. It's, to me, this idea of complexity and the fear, you know, trying to overly simplify this idea, even in the financial world of like, oh, this number is bigger than that number. Everybody is doing this and everybody or the majority says this is wrong. Infinite banking is wrong. You should just step beyond that and start. And I just really just want to be encouraging that it does not take these great big numbers. It does not. So,
you know, now on page 17 of Becoming Your Own Banker, the title of the section here is The Problem. Right? The problem is lack of control and ownership over the banking function. I used the analogy before, you know, we're obsessed with how fast we can paddle the boat.
Yep.
The rate of return, paying no mind whatsoever to the gaping holes in the bottom of the boat. It's like an obsessive, compulsive type of behavior with the rate chasing.
Yep.
And we jump clean over the cost of conventional credit. You know, go pull up what the cost of the true interest cost of a mortgage is. Like, go whatever online mortgage calculator you want to do, plug in the numbers that are relevant to your area. Then look at the graph and look for the total number of interest dollars, the volume of interest, right? In this part of the book on the problem, Nelson talks about how the problem is the volume of interest. On the right-hand side, about halfway down, this means that the interest portion of every dollar spent is perpetual. It never seems to dawn that the volume of interest is the real issue, not the annual percentage rate. And this is true just that the mortgage is a particularly egregious example because it's a very long-term debt. It's amortized. There's all these non-interest costs that are the cost of acquiring the loan. So it's interest by another name, but there's all these other ways of obfuscating the true cost there. You know, the annual percentage rate. I mean, I really have fatigue over talking about it because it's like,
yep.
APR is a product of federal legislation, 1972 Truth in Lending Act. Like that number is not what people think of when they think of an interest rate, where you might think of, you know, the percentage of the amount borrowed that's paid to the lender in interest, right? A percentage rate of the amount borrowed paid in interest, an interest rate. That is not what APR is, right? There's a whole formula for APR, and it has nothing to do with that volume of interest, right? The amount of dollars that come into your personal economy that go out in the form of interest, non-principal and loan repayment, not to mention all the hassle and the nightmare and the humiliation of going through a conventional borrowing process. And that's just mortgages, right? Auto notes, and nothing's getting cheaper, right? So things are going to cost more. The need for credit's only going to increase, right? You can finance consumer purchases with all these Affirm and Klarna or whatever it is. You know, you go to buy a dining table on Amazon and you get an option to pay for it over 2 years. I mean, everything's financed. And I mean outright finance. Like, you could borrow someone's money to pay for it. And then other people, the natural thing, you know, coming back to the Dave Ramsey thing, well, I'll just pay cash. And there is this lack of awareness, this lack of interest in considering or addressing. You know, it's almost like we're talking to a wall when we come up with this. Like, it's the opportunity cost involved in liquidating capital, the interest and dividends given up, right? The opportunity cost forfeited when we spend cash, when we liquidate cash, right? That too is a financing cost, right? Like Nelson said, everything is financed. You either pay interest to somebody that to whom or from whom you borrowed the money, or you give up interest you otherwise could have accumulated. The question is who owns and controls the function of granting credit. That is the question. We don't escape interest cost. We don't escape that. We either pay it outright, nominally, we can see it on the cash statement of cash flows, or we incur it through opportunity cost. It's unavoidable. Right, it's unavoidable, and so the only question is: do we own that the entity which is executing and collecting the loan and the loan repayment? That is the question. Everything that comes on the investment side is a different conversation. I have this happen, you know, clients, they'll read the book, they'll watch the mechanics series, they'll listen to a lot of the podcast. And for some reason, this idea, you know, I get, and it's hard for me to deal with sometimes, but it's the attitude of, I'm just diversifying. I want to, you know, scrape off this little bit of what I've got available and we're going to start this over here.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you want to with the crumbs from the table, you're going to take control of the bank. I mean, do what you want. We'll start where we can, meet the client where they're at. I get it. But it's so indicative of missing the more fundamental point.
Yeah.
Right? It's like that question, you know, how free do you want to be? Right? How much capital in your life or your personal economy, wherever you're at whatever scale, how much of that do you want to control?
The mortgage rate versus volume, the mortgage example, and then people, you know, scrape off or just throw rocks at the idea of, you know, becoming your own banker. Just throw rocks at the idea of the infinite banking concept because of their predetermined position, whatever it may be. They have dug their heels in and what they believe is right. And anything in opposition to that is wrong, right? Because they have decided that what they believe, and we all decide what we believe, right, is right. And so I can't learn anymore. We already, you know, pigeonhole everything. Oh, life insurance is bad. It's the arrival. Absolutely. I can't learn anymore. Syndrome. Choosing not to learn more is worse than not having the ability to learn more, in my opinion. But these same, very same people, they may not even have a mortgage, but they have the consumer debt, the credit card debt. At 18, 20, 21, 22, 28, and 29% interest. And they're the very same individual that challenges with indignity, what is the rate of return on that life insurance policy while you're carrying $60, $40, $15, $100,000 in credit card debt and student loans? Well, hey, man, it's like if you enjoy owning all of that debt and all of that obligation on all of that interest, God bless you. Why do you want to throw rocks at somebody who has a different opinion or position, right? And not just on interest rates, but has a whole different position and possibly a way out for somebody in that condition that's carrying all that debt. Why do you want to throw rocks at them just because it doesn't fit your preconceived narrative? Yeah. Right? And I mean, how do you say, I already damn know everything, I don't want to learn anything, without saying it? How do you say it? Yeah. I don't know.
It's really a dogmatic.
That's exactly what kind it of is. View. It is.
But it's the inherent. I get it. In another sense, I get it, because it's the generational inherited paradigm. No one has ever, I wasn't, nobody I know was ever brought up and taught that what matters before anything else in the financial world is whether you have control and ownership over capital. You know, the crypto world, you know, you'd think that like the outside the box type thinkers, techie type people would be more into this IBC stuff, and you know, they've trailed off into the crypto land. And nothing for or against crypto, that's not the point. That's a particular manifestation of what may one day be money, right? And then you can talk about, you know, is it acquired because people are waiting for one day for that to be the money, and then they're going to circulate it as the general medium of exchange, or are they just treating it as a speculative investment?
You know, I see excuse me, I'm a hodler. You know, we talked about that. I own Bitcoin, I own others, and you know, but I see a lot of the people that embrace crypto. Yeah, they're outside of the box thinkers in some levels, no question about it. But there's an awful lot of, like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm drowning in debt. I need the bigger number.
Like, yeah,
I'm still chasing rate of return. There's an awful lot of that in there. Yeah.
And that always works out, right, when fixing personal problems. But the idea that the problem, you know, in the Austrian and libertarian world, you know, there's been no broad embrace of IBC, even though Nelson Nash, you know, personally knew Leonard Reed, was a major donor to the Mises Institute. You know, Bob Murphy has a history with the Nelson Nash Institute. You know, there's still not been any sort of, outside of like what little work I do, of an Austrian type embrace of what we're talking about, because for some reason there's the lack of attention to the legal contractual question of ownership over the entity that executes the loans. right? The contractual ownership, the contractual control over credit. And the question of where that locus of control resides, right? Who decides when to make the loan and when to demand the loan repayment? And which entity is receiving the surplus generated from the performance of that function? Where's the dividend going? Right? That map of cash flow and the particular location, what I said, the locus of control, the entity or the individual that owns that function, controls it, and benefits financially from the performance of it. That is a legal, contractual question. It's not a physical question, right? It's not a question of in what form is the money paid, right? Digital, precious metal, fiat paper. That's a separate question. Maybe an interesting question, fine. A different question, right? The question over who benefits financially, who receives the surplus generated, the profit generated from the performance of the banking function, that is the question. That is the problem. That is the core of the issue. And that is a legal question. It's a contractual question. And it can only be answered on those grounds. And so when we fall off into the wilderness, as the freaking vast majority of the stuff online today is about rate chasing difference in investment returns versus cost of capital, it's like you're totally missing the point. Go pull up FDIC records. Look at the income to these financial institutions. You know, we're talking about that money. Right? Where does the surplus generated from the performance of the banking function go? And is it fun, you know, nice little sprinkle cherry on top with the philosophical monetary theory side of this? Are we contributing on an individual level to the business cycle by actively taking part in the fabrication or the counterfeiting, we might call it, of new money? Well, if you bank with conventional financial institutions, commercial banks, you are. And, you know, to my mind, the answer to the monetary problems that come with the business cycle, the problem of fractional reserve banking, you know, legalized counterfeiting, the answer there is not political, right? You're not going to get a durable, long-lasting state solution to what is really a moral problem, right? The morality of counterfeiting money versus using legitimate, true money. That you're not going to solve that with a state solution. It's like internally contradictory. You want the entity with the legal monopoly over violence to impose the moral solution. It's like that should raise flags, right? The way to address it is not political. It's individual. Right, it's at the individual level. And on the one hand, that may be like, well, you know, what am I, the individual, going to do to change the world? It's like, yeah, maybe on the margin, nothing. But on the other side of it, one, that's the only way anything ever is going to change societally over time for the long term anyway. And two, it's not even about the rest of that. It's just about you. You and your family and your successes and what you can this is why the idea of secession and decentralization comes in. It's like all that out there can be doing whatever they're going to do, and they're going to do whatever they're going to do. You can focus on your personal economy, exercising, controlling, improving, strengthening, adding to your control over the banking function. And that to be like, oh, like that.
Regardless of what they say and what type of authority they assume in saying what they're saying or whatever it is they're doing. And I just love that. I would just, you know, my lovely wife and I talk regularly because it's fun, right? And she's really intelligent. And she even listens to me every now and then. Talking about what other people are going to do that they're going to do anyway. You know, I've come to embrace this idea from her is, let them.
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't rob my peace if somebody doesn't embrace the infinite banking concept. It doesn't rob my peace if, you know, somebody needs to drag an agent off into the weeds and get into the minutia of rates of return or illustrations or the various topics that one can be drug off into the weeds and beat to death with.
Relapsing into rate chasing.
It's Now wait a minute. You want to introduce the idea, the concept of relapse. We could do a whole series of podcasts on relapse. You get exposed to this idea, you put your hand to the plow, and it works out, and then it falls off because of whatever reason, your actions that are followed by your thinking that could be influenced by the noise. I mean, yes. So. We should schedule that up and just do one on relapse and how to avoid it and what it actually looks like. Because it's real. You know, I mean, I see it. I know you see the results of other people's work, you know, that just goes wrong. And it's not always their fault, but when it is their fault, there's some, you know, degree of relapse. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. I'm just saying, just let them. They're going to do what they do. It's you. And this idea of the bottom down thinking, you know, and two, it's like, are we part of the problem when we sign our name to that dotted line? And then this money, these digits is created out of thin air that wouldn't have happened if it weren't for you doing that. Right. And that's only part of the expansion of this fictitious money supply, right? But then it gets in, it is a moral issue. There's no question, I agree, it's a moral issue. But then, and I have these conversations regularly with our clients. It's, you know, James, should I pay this mortgage off? You know, well, just because you can doesn't mean you should. You know, well, I got this loan before, you know, I discovered Nelson's work and becoming your own banker. You know, so when you do things, it, you know, timing does have a place in our activities. And
you're not going to change everything overnight.
You can't.
Yeah, and you got to provide for your people. I get it, right? It's about being on the right path.
Yes.
Going towards a better future.
And so not artificially.
Yes, right. Yeah. Not jumping over, doing things the right way. You know, we've been, as I like to remind everybody, this is the longest running podcast on the infinite banking concept that there is. And you might think, and look, there's the growth has been slow and steady over time, right? But I know that some could get the idea of, well, all you talk about is the IBC. Like, how can this, what's different? What's next? What's newer? What's the next best to way to make it better? And I could see people being disappointed that that is not the case, that we're not saying the exact same things we've been saying for over 5 years now. We've developed ourselves and improved in how we discuss and share and talk about these things, and stuff comes up month to month, week to week, that is interesting to talk about. But the fund, you know, here we are 5 years later, still quoting from the same book. You know, my book says very clearly on the excerpt in the back cover that you need to read Nelson's book before you read this one, right? It's not like we're reinventing anything here. And that should be refreshing. That is the alternative. That is counterculture today, to just return to first principles, to allow basic philosophy, basic principled positions to inform your entire pattern of behavior. That is counterculture. That is fresh and new and exciting, because everything out there in the rest of the world, everything that we're swimming in, is constant. Here's the new flashy thing. It's like, man, how much of that do you want to just, you know, keep drowning yourself
in? I'm glad you brought that up, young man, because I know that there's some level of that in existence, you know, disappointment, same thing, long running, long form, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you're going to talk, who is this guy, yeah. You know, and I think we're quite entertaining because of our individual uniqueness, you know, frankly, and so whether the cameras are on or not, I mean, I sit down with you and talk with you at length anytime. every opportunity I have. I have fun. I enjoy it. And I think it is very beneficial. And if somebody has the opportunity and chooses to listen in, I think that if you have an interest in economics and the infinite banking concept, you're going to greatly benefit. And you can choose to disagree. It's okay. I talk to agents all the time. And I was talking to a gentleman earlier just this week at an event. And oh my gosh, can't recall his name. He listens. I know he listens, and I appreciate him. And we're in a group setting, Bill. And he said, and there was a question in the group setting, you know, and I mean, a speaker asked me to go up and speak with him. I agreed. It was purely impromptu. I was just going by to say hi. There's an audience there that are sharp individuals. And Bill's like, afterwards, he's like, James, you know, within this organization, you're encouraged to have a mentor. And I was told that because I'd been in the industry so long that I didn't really need a mentor. And he said, well, I really did need a mentor. And I just want you to know that you are my mentor listening to the podcast. And I'm like, oh, well, Bill, that's pretty cool. Thank you for saying that. And that's just one thing. But I want to say that as you're saying that, I know there are people out there, it's gone too long. You know, they talk about the minutia. They talk about all of these different things that is not minutia, but nuance could be minutia. They talk around. I heard one lady, I think earlier this year, you know, talking about listening to our discussions on the podcast. Oh, yeah. And she used a terminology like land the plane.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's kind of along the same thinking. And then just in the last couple of weeks, you know, we released a Thanksgiving episode, you know, which I like to do those. We've done Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, Halloween specials, and they're fun. And the reason I'm bringing it up, because they don't really get a lot of views. They don't get as many views as whenever you and I or together, or there's maybe a Q&A. But I'm just saying that the Thanksgiving episode of 2024, there is so much stuff in there that I think people miss because they assume that it's just a Thanksgiving. Oh, we're going to be thankful for Nelson Nash.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, we've talked about, you know, no one likes to be terrorized by the algorithm. And this pressure, explicit or implicit, to meet a production schedule has its advantages and disadvantages. And
it'll wear you out if you let it.
Yeah. Look, I think that this is really the only place on the internet where you're going to get this sort of in-depth, rigorous, ongoing, consistent encouragement and support for old school Nelson Nash style infinite banking. I just don't, I know there's other podcasts, great. I, you know, no shade to anybody, but I feel like I continue to drive out here to do these podcasts, to say these
things. An hour and a half in good traffic going away.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. And it was like 5.5 when I lived in Lubbock. So I mean, I continue to do this because I don't hear these things in other places.
What? I'm insulted. I thought you came down to hang out with me.
Well,
what?
That's a side benefit. But the, you know, I don't, like with the dissertation, I mean, it took me forever to like figure out what I want to say, because the idea of saying stuff that other people have already said and like, and just repeating things or, you know, for the sake of a sale or something, like, drains my soul. Like, I can't even imagine that. So I don't know. Maybe others are out there also knocking it out of the park on this exact same sort of stuff, but I don't think that's the case. And it doesn't have to be, that's the other thing. It doesn't have to be for everybody. Like, there's this, I don't know if it's like an entitlement or an expectation, like, you know, that you're going to work with everyone. that anybody who wants to be a client necessarily is qualified to be a client, and anybody who wants to listen must be satisfied in their experience. That's just not the case here. It's okay. We don't have to get along. That might be shocking to some people. I know in the professional context, it's like it's a revelation that we don't have to agree. Like, you can have your business practices. You can do the quick, high volume type thing over there, and I can be over here and do things differently, and we can all exist like in the same country and like speak the same language. Like, that's even all right. Be
cordial if you cross paths.
Right. We don't have to we don't have to bring it up. We don't have to talk about it. Right. We don't have to talk about your anti-base premium type policy design, or like, you want to use direct recognition and, you know, annually renewing term riders. Good for you. Do it over there, right? We don't have, and, you know, like, I keep referring to this guy who's commenting, you know, they want to debate. Let's have the debate, right? Everybody wants to debate, right? We live in such a politicized culture now. Like, the thing to do is have the debate, and who's going to dominate who. And I'm not interested. Like, this isn't, I did mock trial in high school and college. Like, I'm good at it. It was fine. I've been that person who wants to debate and like beat somebody over the head with words. I'm over that. I'm beyond it, right? We don't have to do that, right? This isn't England. We're not like in the Oxford debate hall type thing. We can be grown up American individuals, right?
See, I can't think of a better way to spend a Saturday morning. I can't.
But to just go do your own thing. Like, I view my obligation, you know, to you, to Nelson, to continue to share my understanding of how I see this, because I think it helps people, and I've got 7 years now of evidence to support that, and so I'll keep doing that. And if people want that, then that's available. And if they don't want that, that is okay.
And it is okay that they don't have to convince you of their position being correct.
I don't know what that is. We call it, and I'm sure no one listening has ever done this, right? But I call it validation seeking.
Yeah.
Like, you want to get in touch. Yeah. Because I don't know.
I just don't agree with you, because this is what I do, and this is
right.
This is why.
So and so said this.
Yeah.
You know, if you email or you go into the website and you talk about all the other people you listen to. One, I know them, right? And I know what it is you're referring to. Like, you're not telling me anything new, I guess, when we talk about the other shows and the programs. I get it. But it's not, you don't need to convince me. You don't need my permission, right? You don't need my validation. You don't need anybody's validation. I believe that the individual with their own agency is capable of determining for themselves with their own reasoning what the right step is for them.
Yep.
I believe that. I also believe people are going to do things utilizing their own reason or not, and they end up doing stuff that I wouldn't do. Also fine. I'm not in control of that. I don't want to be in control of that. I don't need to work with everybody. Like, I really, my time... I did an interview with David Stearns for the Nelson Nash Initiative podcast thing, which is probably going to come out around the time this comes out. And he asked me, you know, I don't know, I won't get too far into it, but he's like, you know, how are you going to continue to be able to do this over the long run? As if I'm just getting, you know, slammed with all sorts of new business. And, you know, a nice question to be asked, flattering, I don't think. It took me a minute to like figure out how to respond to that. But that, you know, it's really not the case. My focus on these ideas and people who want to do these ideas has a very wonderful sorting effect.
Absolutely. Right?
The people who just want to do this, who want to do IBC, who want to do what Nelson taught, I get to work with them. Mm-hmm. And this, which is the slim minority, right? The people who want to go buy the thing that was marketed to them because YouTube is just a marketing pipeline for the next best financial innovation, they go do that over there. You know, I don't need to be the one who submits all this business and has, you know, sets records as far as like number of new clients. I don't have that problem. And this focus on returning ownership and control over the banking function to the individual has a lovely selection effect.
You know, it to me, well, how did you answer his question?
Something along those lines.
Okay.
What I think what I ultimately said was, look, I'm not at that point. Like there's
systems and processes.
Yeah, there's 24 hours in a day. I have, that's a big part of it. I have, you know, certain interests, you know, I do write and all this stuff. And I want to do more like courses, like the mechanic series. So there's other things I want to do. And there's only so much time in a day. And it is theoretically possible that enough people hear this perspective and want to work with me and that I just can't work with them all. And if that day were to come, it's not here yet. If that day were to come, clients come first.
Always. So always.
Clients come first. So there is a ceiling, right? There is. It's not as if I just have infinite time. And I'm also not just going to build out sloppily and rapidly to get enough people licensed to be able to, you know, sign enough applications to handle all the business just because it's there. Mm. I don't think that's right either. There's going to be a limit. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, as you told me very early on, and I've learned intimately the truth of this, the market will find your weakness and crush you until you do something about it.
Yep.
And so there could well be a time where that happens, where it's like, there's just, in some sense, not a choice. Like I'll have to build out the training structure and the background systems and processes to support like a small team of, you know, staff advisors or, you know, people who just work under me to then, you know, meet that hypothetical demand that doesn't exist yet. Like that could happen and I could see the contours of that, but that's what I, basically what I told him.
I got you. I think that, you know, I mean, we're all limited in time, right? And so there is a ceiling and limited time. It's a period. It's a limited resource. But the idea that so the going back to the marketing and then to the work that you're called to do and you're led to do and that you're doing that you want to do.
Yes.
Right? The work that you want to do. That is a sorting mechanism among many other. It does many things, but one thing it does sort, and it falls right in with Jim Rohn, attraction rather than promotion. When people read this, which, and I've said it in various settings, but this will be required reading. It will be the companion work to Nelson's Becoming Your Own Banker. Right. In my humble opinion, I know what's in here, and I can't wait for you to discover what's in here, okay? But the work does have a sorting effect, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and then it's a good thing.
It's a great thing. And I think that, you know, in the footprint or the big wide world of the life insurance industry, you know, they have the concept of agency where there's an agency of multiple agents and they have the independent marketing organizations and they all have their different characteristics. But if you look at Nelson Nash, right, I mean, just consider Nelson Nash for a minute. And then his mentor, as you mentioned earlier, Leonard E. Reed. You know, and I've said it and you said it and you probably already know it. But Leonard E. Reed mentored several people. And another one that he mentored was Ron Paul. So Leonard Reed was limited in time and he wrote a bunch of books, 28, maybe 30, 32. I don't even know all the books that he wrote, you know. But he had limited time too. But look at all the people's lives that he touched, you know, through the people that he had mentored. You know, just think what if he hadn't have taken the time to spend with Nelson Nash? You know, what if he'd have kept going and tried to do everything on his own and didn't spend the time with Ron Paul? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think that the maturity, evolution, the process of time and aging and maturing, I think that's there's value in that, in mentoring other people and working with other people as, you know, your work expands to the point where it requires more time. Mm-hmm. That time must be taken from somewhere or reallocated from somewhere. So I'm with you. I love the sorting idea. And I that also is my point here, is that also can be very sorting. Mm. Right? I mean, just the idea of working with other people, you know, where Nelson quit production when he printed the book, Becoming Your Own Banker, in 2000. He was a life insurance agent since 1964 and did very well. Right, by many measures within the industry, got many awards, received many awards, and he put them face back in the back of the closet. Right, so and I'm thankful that he spent the time that he spent with as people, especially me. You know, I'm selfish. So anyway, it has a very sorting effect. So, you know, we've gone a minute. You want to touch this or?
Not really. there was a comment. I'm not even going to say the commenter's name, but it's a giant. I mean,
it huge. Just makes your eyes roll in the back of your head when you see these big, long comments. I'll address it later.
Okay. It's rate chasing. You know, this only makes sense if the rate on the investment exceeds the policy loan rate. Otherwise, just go buy municipal bonds, pay cash for everything. No mention of the banking function.
Well, all of this was in the episode that he even commented on. None of this was in that episode. So he's taken his baggage from wherever he picked it up and carried it from to, you know, this episode that he did not listen to. If he did, he wouldn't have commented all of this.
I mean, we addressed a lot of the actual meaningful.
Yeah, I won't leave you relevant hanging. I'll address it in a Q&A or something later. You know, it's the same stuff. You know, it gets old and fatiguing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I had fun, man. What do you have? What else you have?
No, I'm good. I like it. Thank you all for your patience with the book. It'll be done and available when it's available.
How many are in a case?
I don't know. Let's see. There were 8 cases for 200, so I guess that would mean 25.
Well, I've got 25 to 50, and 25 aren't available. Thanks for listening. I had fun.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.